heard some sounds. Okay, unfortunately, I don't have a clicker, so I'll just walk through this. So I guess there were some questions online. If I could go through maybe an investigation or two that I did and kind of a little bit how it relates here. Especially because, you know, we're focusing on Linux here in this, and in an enterprise investigation, you are going to need to know more than just Windows, so having some Linux experience is really helpful. So I like to go back to an early investigation I did when I was with Mandiant in, when was this? 2011. So it was the first real incident response investigation I did with Mandiant, because my background is law enforcement, criminal justice, plain single system forensics, so dead box forensics. So I'm more of a file systems base from my background than I was an incident responder. So Mandiant hired me in 2010 and took me on site to the first incident response I got to do with Mandiant, or with anybody, frankly. And my boss was there with me the first day. So my director took me, flew me up to this place far away from my home, and ended up leaving me there after the first day. Didn't tell me he was going to do it, just told me at the end of the day, oh, by the way, you'll be doing this the rest of the week on your own. Okay, thanks. So the first thing, the reason we got called there was prior to a weekend, the IT, it was an IT, not a manager, maybe a server administrator, noticed that his domain controllers had some, it says NetFlow alerts, but that's not true, it's performance alerts. So his domain controllers baseline was about 20% CPU activity, and for 2 days straight they were pegged at over 100% activity. So first of all, you have to know a little bit about networking. What is a domain controller? What does a domain controller do? Come on, some networking background. I got to do this interactive, and the guys online aren't going to answer me. So the domain controller maintains credentials and acts as the authorization or authentication portal or server for a domain, just at a high level, not to get into technicalities. Generally, its only purpose is to serve credentials or pass tickets. That's it. That's all it does. And it does a lot of this every day, but it doesn't take a lot of resources. So normally, a domain controller will run at this 20% performance. There's no reason for it to go higher. It's just simply passing credentials or passing tickets for sessions back and forth. So it was pretty good that they had an alert set on this. You never know. Inbounds, we call them inbounds when somebody calls us for incident response. It's always something different. Somebody found something. And this was just happenstance. Domain controllers, he was paying attention to the logs. They were spiked at 100%. So in one case, I saw domain controllers where the company used a hybrid domain controller file server. Don't do that. That's done. They don't do that anymore, by the way. but the domain controller, if it's spiked at 100%, and it only passes out tickets or credentials, what is it doing? It's passing out a lot of tickets and credentials. A lot of tickets and credentials. So that is very indicative of some type of credential harvester. So we get on site on Monday, and they have an image of this system in the lab where we're working. The war room where we're working, we like to call it. Pardon me? Yeah, it's going to move back and forth. Sorry, I can't sit still. That's not possible. So they already had an image of it. They started looking at it. They already knew that Bob, somewhere in Europe, had connected to the domain controller during this time that these event logs or the performance had spiked. So they, over the weekend, while we're flying up to see them, send their security team, you know, they send three or four guys to Europe to go interview Bob, because why is he interacting with a domain controller in the U.S.? So think about it, this was 2010, 2011. So even then, we weren't as aware that the outside threat was the bigger threat. So that was actually where Mandy got a lot of start, was realizing that this is not all insider stuff. Now, sometimes it is insider stuff. But regardless, this company sent their security team up to talk to Bob, give him a lecture and interview him on why he's connecting to a domain controller in the U.S. Incidentally, Bob is just an engineer. He has nothing to do with the network. He is simply an engineer for this company making widgets. So we finally get an image of Bob's laptop. And again, we're working in the war room. And start looking at Bob's laptop. And that's when my director said, oh yeah, I'm going to leave you the next few days on your own, so figure this out. And we found that when we started looking at Bob's laptop, well, it was connected to Jim's laptop back in the U.S. And the IT manager, not the one that did the alerting, but the IT, they didn't really have a SOC or security at the time. But the IT manager says, oh, well, I know Jim. He's worked with us for 21 years. He wouldn't do anything like this. Okay. Why are you not getting it? It wasn't Bob. Probably not Jim. But this guy every time says, oh, it's got to be Jim. Anyway, so this was midweek, Wednesday, looking at Jim's laptop, and sure enough, it comes from a Samba server in the U.S. So this was good because this Samba server was close to where I was working, so they could go out and get the Samba server image pretty quickly. And while I'm looking at the Samba server, you know, I kind of don't know what I'm doing. I'm just looking at the directory to see what's on there. So I have a base, understanding of how the file system is laid out in Linux, like you all should by now. You know, you're going to get /etc, /home, /temp, /user. Now, this one was interesting because it had /user/games. Okay, /user/games is fine. It should be empty, right? Normally. I mean, it might get installed by default. If it's Ubuntu, you might get a user games folder that's empty until they install games. This one wasn't. This user games directory had psexec.exe. Now, remember, I've already dated this. I've already dated this because I said it was back in 2011, so PowerShell wasn't widely used at the time. So psexec is a legitimate tool by Mark Rusinovich, SysInternals, to allow you to execute code remotely to different systems. Right? So you can use psexec to push other executives to a system and execute it. It's good for the administrator. It's also good for the bad guy. So psexec, and I think it was this one. And there were maybe a half dozen Windows executables in the user's games profile, or a folder. One of them was fgdump.exe. At the time, this was a very efficient, effective credential harvester. So, okay. These are probably not legitimate files. Why are there... And I'm saying this out loud as I'm looking at the system. I'm saying, Windows executables in user games. That just doesn't sound right to me. And one of the other IT managers stood up and said, oh, yeah, but that's a Linux system, and Linux users are weird. Okay, I agree. Linux users are weird. That's fine. But they, Linux administrators are not storing psexec and fgdump in the user games folder. If they are, that's bad administration. And you need to fire them anyway. So looking back through the logs and doing everything you're doing here, looking through all our connection logs, I found, sure enough, that the user account was connected from another Samba server somewhere in the U.S. And finally, we get to a SFTP server in Asia that was misconfigured. A couple of reasons how it was misconfigured. When we start looking at the SFTP server, there's really no log data. We can't figure out. By this time, by the way, the director's back because now he knows it's a real incident, so he's back with me. We're looking at the SFTP server. The log stuff is gone. It's really not, we're not sure what's going on, but we know it's misconfigured because it's externally facing. It was not supposed to be. It's supposed to be internally configured. Also, very telling, was the fact that at the time, in 2011, SSH allowed, by default, root to log in interactively. Root was able to log into SSH interactively. Now, I've seen some where it's turned off by default, so I'm not always sure, but in 2011, I assure you, it was turned on by default that you could log in through SSH if the services were allowed through, and in this case, FTP was allowed through, therefore SSH was allowed through, you could log in as root, as super user, without having to log in as somebody else first and then do super user, directly as root. So what happened was the attacker was able to brute force the root account on the SFTP server and simply gain the credentials to get in. So it was also a bad password, of course, because he brute forced it within a few days. And we really might not have solved this if not for on Friday, when, you know, we've been there a week now. I've got two other people with me now because something real is going on. And we can't get the image. It's way the heck in Asia. It's going to take us weeks to get an image of that system. So we ended up going ahead and logging in remotely, and the attacker was on the system at the time. If we didn't have the attacker on the system at the time, if we didn't have that, we would not have had his IP address because he had all kinds of tools on this system that included log clearing tools and something similar to the WTemp clearing tool that you saw in the binary portion of this class. So he had tools to clean up his logs. We wouldn't have found his IP. His external IP address, anyways. So, it's not usually the insider, but sometimes it is. You know, sometimes it is. I'm not going to say it's not the insider ever. Sometimes it is. But a lot of times with what we see, the attackers have been in the investigation or in the infrastructure for months, if not years. And inevitably, the company, when I go to do the incident response, will ask me, well, how did they know where our crown jewels were? Well, how did they know where our most expensive, most important intellectual property was, or where the credit card data was? Certainly, they must have had help from somebody inside. No, and conversely, I ask them, for a network diagram, and I never get one. So I guarantee the bad guy has a good network diagram. If they've been in that environment for several years and they're running legitimate commands to map out your network, they know where stuff is, probably better than the company. And most companies nowadays are managed. You know, this was probably managed by, managed services in the U.S. This was probably managed by something in Europe. Servers and workstations, and then you've got your firewall teams, and if you're sending all of this stuff out to manage services, nobody's got a good overview of what's going on, in my experience. Okay, one more, and I'll let you get back to work. The next one, and this one I forgot I even made this. I don't think I even gave this presentation to anybody. But last year, my colleague and I had a had a customer call us, and they thought they had some type of intrusion. They believed they had Bill Gates malware, always appropriate, right? Name your malware after the founder of Microsoft. They had the Bill Gates malware on for their development servers, and they were externally facing. So our job was to find out how those malware got installed. Now, Bill Gates is a botnet, okay? Bill Gates malware is a botnet. Bill Gates is a guy who's a billionaire, but Bill Gates malware is a botnet. So this is not usually a targeted attacker, but sometimes companies want to know what happened, how it got on there. And we'll take those cases, and we did in this case. So before the investigation starts, you know, we get some information. The four systems are really, what do you call it? What's the word? Concentrators. They're cluster systems. They're running this WebLogic framework. Now, frameworks, so you have to understand a little bit about how web page building works or application building works. You're going to have an operating system, right? We talked about, you know, file systems before, but think about it this way as well, is you can layer this out. You have to have the operating system. On the operating system, you have to run a web server. And then for most applications, so you don't have to repeat building the same routines over and over again, you'll have an application framework. So the application framework can be Tomcat. What are some of the other ones? Trying to blank. Drupal. In this case, it was WebLogic. So any of those places can be attacked, right? So you can attack the operating system. You can attack the core web server, Apache or IIS, or you can attack the framework. Or you can attack the application that's running on top of the framework. So all of these leave the ability for some vulnerabilities, right? So the in this case, they're running WebLogic. And they have some SSH services accessible through certificate-based authentication. So they weren't sure if somebody was logging in through SSH. They would have had the stolen certificates to be able to do that. So before analysis begins, before I even have the images, why not get an idea? I don't know every framework out there. I don't know everything that's running out there. So I always look up the vulnerabilities in that particular version. Right, so I already have an idea of what to look for because I don't have a date or time to look for this thing. I don't know when this happened. I don't know how they got in. So I want to be able to get as much information as I can. So what I found was the most recent vulnerability on WebLogic was this unserialized data through Java. Gets a little technical, but this unserialized data allows for the ability to send data without getting it checked, and then it can be opened subsequently, just in a very high level. So what that makes is it makes objects that are vulnerable in the core of the JavaScript. So this is not attacking an application. This is attacking the framework in the core utilities in the framework. And it still exists, by the way. Just a couple of years, it's still there. So really, what we had the customer ultimately do is take out the core tools because they didn't need them. Looking at the system, got a little bit lucky, to be honest, because if I didn't find this was going to make it very hard. So I took four systems. I looked at one first. My colleague looked at one first, and I got really lucky because I found it. nohup.out file. Anybody familiar with that? What that might signify? It's not a specific file. nohup is no hangups. So if I run something as no hangups, I can redirect the output into a file, and if it's defaulted, it's just going to be nohup.out. This was an accident. if this accident didn't happen, this case would have been a lot harder. But because of this accident, I had some good timestamps on the file. So it was probably it was probably installed on the system in 2015, and then the other two times are just showing that it had been updated. And the content of the file, and the reason I found it was because I was looking for this highlighted file here. Because when I did some of my initial, it's the other way around. When I found this file, this was kind of, it had a lot of junk in it. I don't even know what it was logging. It was logging something as no hangup. So it was some kind of log file that was being generated, run through no hangup process. And what I found was some things I could read that were very clear. And this HEY5EC, or HEYSEC.temp, is something that I could look up online. Right? And also, this is running a Linux system. Why does it have C Windows temp HEYSEC? So it stood out quite glaringly. So I did what we did in the binary lab. I just threw it into Google HEYSEC, and the very first hit that comes up is some type of Chinese language website, right? So the only thing I can read is web logic, but have to be onto something. So where do you go from there? What I found was when I looked at the deserialization, and I translated that back. There was some code on the Chinese language website that included the exact path for the C Windows temp and the temp HEYSEC.temp. So temp HEYSEC was not on the file system anymore, and certainly C Windows wasn't, because C Windows didn't exist. But what this was a code pack so that anybody could run it, and it would automatically check the operating system to determine which one of these it should install. Because the framework can run on different web servers, and different web servers can run on different operating systems. So it was checking to see which one it should install. Right, so then going farther, actually, so we saw, I said 2015, but that must have been the archive time, was that the file system was dropped this Bill Gates malware in the temp folder, and it downloaded and installed some other configuration file, had a very specific C2, so we had some very good information on the file. It was actually still on the file system. And it dropped this file, LOD, so then you go into the LOD, find out what that is, and it's just grabbing the process ID of the running malware, which would have allowed them to be able to inject into it further
or control it by process.
And there was an empty file, HEYSEC.temp, but it was probably just the only artifact that remained. It was empty, so no bytes in there. And then conf.in was probably a configuration file, but it was already deleted. Then finally, the attacker went a little bit farther. So just because it's a botnet doesn't mean it's something you can ignore. You really should clean these systems, because they did install a backdoor, basically. If it can upload and download files and run shell commands, to me that's a backdoor, even if their only purpose is to run a DDoS attack. If that's all they're doing, it still had the ability to steal data. Attacker attribution, it's part of an available public exploit, so we weren't able to say who did this, frankly. There's a lot of words up there, but there's no way for us to know who did this. Anybody could have downloaded this code and used it. And I would like to note that the Chinese language site, by the way, you probably shouldn't go to Baidu.com, these specific links here. on your NTNU account, probably get you flagged at least. And this was the actual package. So the whole code pack is available for download. And, you know, it's only for safety testing, not for crime. Disclaimer. Anyways, the attacker didn't get any farther into the system, and the customer was happy. But that's it. You have to know your operating systems. You have to know some of the basics. You have to know paths. You have to know that Windows binaries don't belong on Linux. Don't be like that IT manager. Any questions on the exercises? Good. Good.